Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record, program number 1022. Edwin, unquote, Manafort, the coming of fascism to Ukraine, and the Russiagate PSYOP. This is being recorded on August 28th of the year 2018. This past week, actually, it happened last week, but in addition to Michael Cohen, Donald Trump's longtime attorney, pleading guilty to a number of charges, Paul Manafort, Trump's former campaign manager, and a lobbyist, foreign agent, for Viktor Yanukovych, the former president of Ukraine, was convicted on a number of different charges. The one of the major principles of the Russiagate PSYOP is that Paul Manafort is a Russia, was serving as a Russian agent when he worked on behalf of Viktor Yanukovych, who was the former president of Ukraine and basically was part of a pro-Russian / Eastern-oriented faction within Ukraine. Ukraine is a country that has a number of divisions. Eastern Ukraine is populated largely by ethnic Russians. Russian is one, or was one, of the official languages of Ukraine. Western Ukraine, however, Galicia, as it is also called, was part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire and is an epicenter of the OUN B and successor organizations. Headed up by Nazi collaborator Stefan Bandera, the OUNB was a political ally of the Third Reich, both in its above-ground manifestation and in its underground manifestation when it became a key element not only of the Galen spy organization, but also of the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, formerly the Committee of Subjugated Nations, formed by Adolf Hitler in 1943. The ABN, in turn, became a key element of the World Anti-Communist League, and the OUNB and the ABN became a key part of the Republican Party as a result of the Crusade for Freedom. The role of that faction grew over the years and reached something of a peak under Ronald Reagan. Those OUNB / ABN elements were projected back into Eastern Europe and the former Soviet Union as a result of the Free Congress Foundation's liberation program. In For the Record 1008, we took a look at Paul Manafort and dubbed him Lee Harvey Manafort because, far from being a Russian agent, although he was working with Viktor Yanukovych, the available evidence, when properly vetted, argues overwhelmingly for the hypothesis that, in fact, Manafort is a U.S. intelligence officer of some kind, some element of CIA would be best bet, and that far from working on behalf of Vladimir Putin, the Kremlin, Russia, etc., he was actually working to basically move Ukraine from the Russian into the Western orbit. In the For the Record 1008 and 1009, we took a look at Lee Harvey Manafort's networking with the Habsburg Group, a group of Western European politicians named after the Habsburgs, the family that ruled the Austro-Hungarian Empire for hundreds of years. And the efforts of Paul Manafort and the Habsburg Group were, again, not on behalf of Russia, not on behalf of Vladimir Putin, not on behalf of the Kremlin, but rather on behalf of the West to basically get Yanukovych to sign an EU association agreement. They were working to separate that from the freeing of former Ukrainian PM Yulia Tymoshenko. Manafort like Lee Harvey Oswald, has been left out in the cold. And in this program, I dubbed him Edwin, or nicknamed him Edwin Manafort, named after Edwin Wilson, a very formidable U.S. intelligence officer who worked for CIA, for an element of naval intelligence. And in that capacity, he was assigned to do a number of things, including and especially infiltrating and training terrorists on behalf of people like Muammar Gaddafi and others. Eventually, Edwin Wilson was left out in the cold. He was convicted of crimes, sent to prison. However, as his counsel persisted over the years, it eventually came out that, in fact, Edwin Wilson had been doing what, all along, what he claimed he was doing, which was working on behalf of CIA. And in something like 2004, Edwin Wilson was freed from prison. He didn't live very long, and his life was essentially destroyed, but eventually he was cleared and vindicated, for those who paid attention to it. In AFA program number 4 from August of 1984, we went into Edwin Wilson and his associate Frank Turple, and what was clear at the time, the rather obvious fact, official pronouncements to the contrary, notwithstanding, that Wilson and Turple were working on behalf of some element of CIA. By the same token, Paul Manafort is a U.S. intelligence officer of some kind, probably, my guess would be, some faction of CIA. And it was in that capacity that he was working to maneuver Yanukovych, who, although pro-Russian, basically wanted to move Ukraine into being part of Europe. The EU Association Agreement would have imposed some very harsh austerity measures on Ukraine, as well as having Ukraine align militarily with the EU and NATO. And it was rejected in part because of pressure from the Kremlin, but also in part because of the, frankly, odious nature of the agreement. When Viktor Yanukovych, in contrast to his apparent promises to sign the EU Association Agreement at a summit in Vilnius, Lithuania, when he did not do that, there followed a series of demonstrations in late November and early December of 2013. Those, in turn, were violently suppressed by the police of Yanukovych's regime. And then the Maidan demonstrations of February of 2014 and the sniper killings of some 100 demonstrators, which, as we will review, may very well have been a provocation. That thoroughly discredited Yanukovych, outraged the American public and international opinion, and led to the Maidan coup and the ascension of organizations like Svoboda, Pravi Sektor, elements that coalesced around the Azov Battalion, and associated elements, basically successors to the OUNB, Ukrainian fascists of World War II, of the World War II era. In this program, we are going to go into much greater depth about Paul Manafort, with the people he was networking with, and some of the dynamics that were involved in the removal of Yanukovych. Time permitting, we will review some of the actual Habsburg family connections, not only to the Cold War, but two things going on in contemporary Ukraine. We looked at those in, for the record, 1008, 1009, and 1010. And in, for the record, 1009, we traced the alliance between the House of Habsburg and U.S. and Western intelligence back to the immediate post-World War I period. Of particular note in that regard was the role of Prince Egon von Hohenlohe, who married into the Habsburg family, and he was acting as a go-between between SS officer Walter Schellenberg, in charge of foreign intelligence for the SD, the Sicherheitsdienst, SS intelligence, and Western intelligence officers such as William Donovan and Alan Dulles of the OSS. And the idea was basically a realization of the Christian West dynamic that we looked at in AFA 37. This was to have a Hitlerless Reich allied with the West in an anti-Soviet crusade. And the available evidence suggests that something along those lines actually did take place, albeit behind the scenes and in an underground fashion.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs are available at spitfirelist.com, also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
Much of the program that we are going to be launching into right now comes from a very important article that appeared on July 2nd of this year being 2018. The article is titled, Wheels Up, Paul Manafort's Flight Records Show How He Supervised EU Top Brass in the Run-Up to Ukraine Revolution. This is by Graham Stack, capital S-T-A-C-K, from BNE Intellinews. That's B as in boy, N as in new, E as in Europe, Intellinews, I-N-T-E-L-L-I-N-E-W-S. The article has since been removed, but it is available via the Wayback Machine. This article shows in much greater detail and depth the degree of networking between Paul Manafort and the Habsburg Group. It is, again, as I have said in past programs, it is interesting that so many media outlets reported Manafort's associates from Western Europe as the Habsburg Group, but none of them went beyond that. They did mention that the Habsburgs were the royal family of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, but none of them asked why the Habsburg Group, why not, you know, the Breakfast Club or the Backstreet Boys or the Gas House Gang or whatever. Why the Habsburg Group? Well, again, as looked at in past programs and as we will review time permitting in this program, it is already in the description for the Record 1022, which will be available presently. The deep relationship between the Habsburgs and elements in Ukraine, including the OUNB-related elements and people like Yaroslav Stetsko, the World War II era head of the Ukrainian satellite state in of Nazi Germany, his relationship with Otto von Habsburg of the Habsburg family dating back to 1967, and other relationships between the Habsburgs and elements of Western intel and the EU and forces working for EU for all of Europe to be integrated into the EU. We will review that, time permitting. None of the articles, including this one, stop to ask why the Habsburg Group, why not some other name. We have already basically gone into that in 1008, 1009, and 1010. What is interesting in this article is the degree of networking between Paul Manafort, or Edwin Manafort, because just like Edwin Wilson, he was operating on behalf of his masters, his control structure in U.S. and Western intelligence, and then has been left out in the cold, framed for crimes, and will almost certainly do some serious time. Maybe they will try to get him to roll over. We will see. Suffice it to say that Manafort's networking with the Habsburg Group was deep and long-standing. We're going to talk about some individuals who were part of this networking, and we're going to take a very close look at Manafort's behavior after the Maidan Revolution, because as this article will illustrate, Manafort spent much more time in Ukraine after the Maidan coup. This was after Yanukovych was gone. Now, some key names here. The Lavushkin family, Sergei, that you will see that variously spelled depending on the transliteration from the Cyrillic alphabet as capital S-E-R-H-I-I or capital S-E-R-H-I-Y, Lavushkin, capital L-O-V-O-C-H-K-I-N. Again, there are some differences in the transliteration. Sergei Lavushkin was Viktor Yanukovych's chief of staff. He also was very close to a powerful Ukrainian oligarch named Dmytro Firtash, F-I-R-T-A-S-H, and along with Firtash, he owned Inter, I-N-T-E-R. That is Ukraine's largest TV station. Now, Lavushkin and his sister, Yulia Lavushkina, Y-U-L-I-A, last name capital L-O-V-O-C-H-K-I-N-A, reflecting the feminine gender manifestation or conjugation of Lavushkin. Her family owned an airline, and those planes from Yulia Lavushkina's airline ferried Manafort around in his extensive dealings with the Habsburg group. So key names here. Sergei Lavushkin and his oligarchical associate, Dmytro Firtash, and Yulia Lavushkina, Sergei Lavushkin's sister, Lavushkin being Viktor Yanukovych's chief of staff and one of the most powerful politicians in the Yanukovych government. Lavushkin and Lavushkina heavily networked with Paul Manafort and the Habsburg group. Both Lavushkin and Yulia Lavushkina were very much pro-EU. They wanted Yanukovych to sign the EU Association Agreement. And again, Yulia Lavushkina owns an airline that did much of the flying of Paul Manafort around. Sergei Lavushkin was Yanukovych's chief of staff and co-owned the largest TV station in Ukraine. We're going to read some parts. Also, one more key relationship. The most important member of the Habsburg group was a guy named Alexander Kwasniewski, a former head of state of Poland. He ran the EU's Ukraine Observation Group, and as such, he had an admitted conflict of interest because he was working with Edwin Manafort, as I have nicknamed him, and Yanukovych, and Sergei Lavushkin and his sister, Yulia Lavushkina, to have Yanukovych sign the association agreement. When, at the last minute, Yanukovych did not sign the EU Association Agreement as he had agreed to do, this was going to take place at a conference in Vilnius, Lithuania. There followed a series of demonstrations in Ukraine on November 29th against Yanukovych's failure to sign the agreement. Yulia Lavushkina was fraternizing with and networking with the student demonstrators on November 29th. Yanukovych's riot police dispersed the demonstrators rather forcefully. That led to even larger demonstrations on December 1st. At that point, Sergei Lavushkin, who was Yanukovych's chief of staff, not only resigned his position in the Yanukovych government in protest of Yanukovych's failure to sign the agreement and the violent dispersal of the student demonstrators, but his TV station, co-owned by Dmytro Firtash, began giving round-the-clock and very high-profile coverage to the dispersal of the student demonstrators. This led not only to the much larger demonstrations on December 1st, but ultimately to the demonstrations which were fired upon by the snipers. It remains to be seen to what extent that was a provocation. It may very well have been, and there is information in that regard. Note again that Manafort spent much more time in Ukraine after the Maidan Revolution. Now, also note the curious behavior of Victoria Nuland. She was an assistant secretary of state, and there was a curious oscillation around a warrant for the arrest of Dmytro Firtash, the oligarch partner of Sergei Lavrushkin, the chief of staff for Yanukovych. And again, Firtash and Lavrushkin together controlled the largest TV station in Ukraine. Some key elements of what happened in the run-up to the ouster of Ukraine, and I'm going to come back to this. Remember the relationship between Manafort and Sergei Lavrushkin. It was profound. Remember the relationship between Manafort and Yulia Lavrushkina, Lavrushkin's sister. It was profound. And remember the dual role of Alexander Krasniewski, key member of the Habsburg group working to get Yanukovych and Ukraine into the EU association agreement, at the same time that Alexander Krasniewski, who was wearing two hats, was heading the EU observation team in Ukraine. Now, on top of that, again, as we looked at in For the Record 982 and again in For the Record 1008, when one of Manafort's daughter's cell phones was hacked, it revealed that basically, in the opinion of his daughter, his money was, quote, blood money, and that he helped, that is to say, Paul Manafort, precipitated the demonstrations that led to the violence, which led to the ouster of Yanukovych and the ascension of the OUNB successor organizations in Ukraine. We should note that those organizations don't appear to have too much popular support. They generally have not done well at the polls. However, they control the Ukrainian national security establishment, the police, the military, and the intelligence services, and they are in key in fundamental control of key elements of the public information sector as well. More about that in our next program. Again, from the wheels up, Paul Manafort's flight records show how he supervised EU top brass in the run-up to Ukraine revolution. You know what? I think I'm going to go ahead and read the first part of the article and then read some of the key parts that we need to understand and emphasize in order to really focus on the role of Lavrushkin, Lavrushkina, Manafort, and Firtash, and Victoria Nuland in this Dos Macabre. So again, from BME Intel News of July 2nd of 2018, wheels up. Paul Manafort's flight records show how he supervised EU top brass in the run-up to Ukraine revolution by Graham Stack, capital S-T-A-C-K, in Berlin from BME Intel News of July 2nd of 2018. Infamous U.S. lobbyist Paul Manafort organized EU luminaries to plead with Brussels to sign off on an association agreement with Ukraine without the freeing of jailed opposition leader Yulia Tymoshenko in 2012-2013. His flight records, revealed by BME and Telenews for the first time, show. Manafort organized the lobbying campaign on the orders of Ukrainian President Viktor Yanukovych, who was ousted by mass demonstrations in Kiev when he eventually failed to sign the deal. The information backs up allegations made by U.S. Special Counsel Robert Mueller that, as part of the campaign to do an association agreement deal, Manafort retained EU super VIPs to lobby for Yanukovych. The flight records also reveal Manafort remained a player in Ukraine after the Maidan Revolution until as late as 2015, only months before he signed up as U.S. presidential candidate Donald Trump's campaign manager. And Manafort's relationship to a top Yanukovych aide who turned against his master during the Euromaidan movement raises questions about the spin doctor's role in Ukraine's 2013-2014 revolution. The story starts with a key meeting in Rome in 2013. Flanked by EU elder statesmen, all former heads of their respective states, Yulia Lavochkina, a Ukrainian MP and the sister of Yanukovych chief of staff Sergei Lavochkin, addressed a select gathering in Rome on the topic of Ukraine's goal of signing an association agreement with the EU. Quote, Ukraine has made its irrevocable choice and is committed to being a part of Europe, part of the European Union, she said, referring to plans to sign an association agreement with the EU at a summit in Vilnius, slated for November of 2013. The president of Ukraine reiterated that he is ready to implement all the necessary measures, she added. The date of the Rome meeting was March 6th of 2013, and the speaker, Yulia Lavochkina, was none other than the sister of Sergei Lavochkin, Yanukovych's powerful chief of staff. Despite the assurances of commitment to the EU less than a year later, Yanukovych's security forces would massacre 100 pro-EU protesters in the heart of Kiev. 3 days later, he fled Ukraine for Russia. Tymoshenko, leader of Ukraine's opposition at the time, was languishing in prison. She had lost to Yanukovych in the presidential elections of 2010, and Yanukovych promptly jailed her in 2011. The international community was outraged, calling her jailing politically motivated and linking her release to the passage of the association agreement deal. All the speakers at the Rome meeting were united by a desire to do the association agreement deal, but the undercurrent of their speeches was an insistence that the signing of the agreement and Yulia Tymoshenko's fate were two separate issues, which was in stark contrast to Brussels' initial line. In her speech, Lavochkina was explicit. The association agreement should be signed independently from Tymoshenko's case. It, signing the association agreement, cannot be held hostage by a single criminal case by the future of Yulia Tymoshenko, because it is an issue concerning the future of Ukraine, she said. As a representative of the Yanukovych administration, Lavochkina's line was predictable, but more surprisingly was the support she got from the eminent European VIPs who backed her up. Using a variety of euphemisms, they pushed essentially the same argument, that the issue of the EU-Ukraine association agreement and the issue of Tymoshenko's imprisonment should be kept separate from each other. The question of the destiny of Ukraine and its European future cannot depend on one single case, unquote, Alfred Gusenbauer, former Chancellor of Austria, said, again quoting, in the case of Tymoshenko, it is necessary to look for solutions without making a complicated situation more complicated, unquote, said Aleksander Kwasniewski, former president of Poland, who was also the senior partner in the European Parliament's monitoring mission, unquote, to Ukraine that had been tasked with resolving the impasse caused by Tymoshenko's imprisonment. Concluding the conference, Romano Prodi, former Prime Minister of Italy and President of the European Commission, argued that the European Parliament monitoring mission to Ukraine, run by Kwasniewski, should examine the Tymoshenko case as, quote, the correct framework for a European Union that helps promote rights, but at the same time does not close off a relationship which is valuable for Ukraine and Europe, unquote. As the audience applauded the awkward grouping on the podium, one man in the audience may have been particularly happy, U.S. spin doctor Paul Manafort, who had flown to Rome that day with Lavochkina in one of the Lavochkin family's private jets. Manafort had assembled the speakers sitting in front of him on the podium and was pulling the strings in the meeting. A few months earlier, Western leaders and EU officials had made Ukraine's signing of an association agreement conditional on the release of Tymoshenko. Skipping down, Manafort was Yanukovych's ace in the campaign to win over the West without the release of Tymoshenko. In part, as a result of Manafort's lobbying efforts, by November of 2013, the EU had agreed to sign the association agreement with Ukraine in Vilnius without having secured Tymoshenko's release. Instead, she was to be allowed to leave Ukraine for medical treatment, exiling her from Ukraine. This was Manafort's hour of triumph, but Russian fury at the thought of Ukraine slipping from its grasp meant that it was to be short-lived. On November 21, 2013, Ukraine's government announced it would not sign the association agreement with the EU on November 28th. And the next section is called the Habsburg PR. On February 28th, U.S. Special Counsel Robert Mueller indicted Manafort for illegal lobbying. The details of the indictment point to Manafort pulling the strings at the March 6th Rome conference. Mueller's indictment states that Manafort, quote, secretly retained a group of former senior European politicians to take positions favorable to Ukraine. The plan was for the former politicians, informally called the Habsburg Group, to appear to be providing an independent assessment of the government of Ukraine actions when, in fact, they were paid lobbyists for Ukraine, unquote. According to the indictment, Manafort paid over 2 million euros to the super VIPs, unquote, from offshore accounts in 2012 and 2013. While the politicians were unnamed, the indictment specifies a European chancellor, unquote, as heading the group. An initially redacted document filed on June 13th identified former Austrian Chancellor Gusenbauer by name as part of the Habsburg Group. The document was a memorandum to Manafort authored in June of 2012 by Italian-based U.S. journalist Alan Friedman, F-R-I-E-D-M-A-N, the man who chaired the March 2013 conference in Rome. In the memo, Friedman suggested recruiting Kwasniewski to the group, but he noted that Kwasniewski would have a conflict of interest because Kwasniewski was the leading figure in the European Parliament's monitoring mission to Ukraine. That monitoring mission was tasked with judging whether Ukraine was fit to sign an association agreement with the European Union. A leader of the monitoring mission could hardly also publicly lobby in favor of Ukraine. Friedman then suggested to Manafort that Kwasniewski appear at conferences together with Gusenbauer, with conferences planned for Berlin, Rome, and Brussels. Those recruited for the group would, quote, take direction from us informally via Alfred Gusenbauer, unquote. Again, quoting, I participated in several international conferences as a speaker, and for this reason, like other participants, I have received an honorarium, Kwasniewski acknowledges. I have not received any financial gratification from the Manafort-linked lobbyists separate from Modern Ukraine or Mercury. I have never received any suggestions for my contributions from Mr. Manafort, Mr. Friedman, or anyone else. In all my political activities, I have presented my own opinions, Kwasniewski added. In Kwasniewski's ghost-written account of his activities in Ukraine in 2012-2014, he describes having had a, quote, double-hatted role as Ukraine's ambassador to Europe and the U.S. and as ambassador of the transatlantic community in Ukraine. If the monitoring mission always kept an eye on its independence and impartiality, not allowing any side to use the mission for its own purposes. It is our belief that this independence and impartiality was fully achieved, European Parliament Press Officer Sonne, S-A-N-N-E, direct capital D-E and then capital R-Y-C-K, said. Alexander Kwasniewski had a double role, working for Ukrainian oligarchs and the EU. This creates conflicts of interest, which is indeed problematic, Stefan Meister, M-E-I-S-T-E-R, expert at the German Council on Foreign Relations, told BNE Intellinews. Then Flight Tracking Manafort is the next section, and it reads, BNE Intellinews obtained flight data from Manafort's Ukraine visits for those years. His flight data made it possible to track his lobbying activities in 2012-2015 in the run-up to the Euromaidan revolution of February 2014 and its aftermath. The flight data points to intensive Manafort supervision of the Habsburg Group, unquote, members such as Gusenbauer, Kwasniewski, and Prodi. Manafort frequently flew on the Lavochkin family's personal jets between Ukraine and Europe to attend their conferences or meet individually. Again, this last couple of sentences because it underscores the degree of networking between Manafort and the Habsburg Group and in turn between Manafort and Sergei Lavochkin and his sister, Yulia Lavochkina. The flight data points to intensive Manafort supervision of the Habsburg Group members such as Gusenbauer, Kwasniewski, and Proby. Manafort frequently flew on the Lavochkin family's personal jets between Ukraine and Europe to attend their conferences or meet individually. Manafort's representative, Jason Maloney, M-A-L-O-N-I, declined to comment on the flight data. A source close to Manafort, however, argued that he had, quote, consistently advocated for Ukraine to have closer ties to the West, unquote. Kwasniewski confirmed this. He, Manafort, was in favor of signing the association agreement. Again, Kwasniewski confirmed this. He, Manafort, was in favor of signing the association agreement, unquote. In other words, moving Ukraine from the Russian orbit to the West. Continuing. Yulia Lavochkina acknowledged owning an executive jet business. Quote, its services were open to everyone on the market, she said. She also acknowledged flying with Manafort to the Rome conference on one of the planes. She, quote, paid for the ticket herself and had her own agenda for the trip, unquote, she said. Manafort lost little time after the creation of the Habsburg Group in June of 2012. On September 20th of 2012, Gusenberg and Prodi spoke at a conference organized by the Otto Renner Institute, that's capital O-T-T-O, next word capital R-E-N-N as in Nancy E-R, Institute with no E. Manafort flew to Vienna on its conclusion the following day. On October 23rd of 2012, He flew on a one-day trip from Kiev to Berlin, where the Habsburg group, including Kwasniewski, were appearing at a conference organized by the Eastern Economy Committee. Kwasniewski confirmed a meeting with Manafort at the meeting. By the end of 2012, the lobbying effort was beginning to pay off. The crowning came on December 18, 2012, when Manafort's visit to Kiev concluded with the 11th Cox-Kwasniewski mission visit. Kwasniewski confirmed meeting Manafort on this occasion. Cox, by the way, is a former Irish politician. Yanukovych, originally scheduled to be visiting Moscow, canceled on the Kremlin with no notice to meet Cox and Kwasniewski. In return, Cox and Kwasniewski helped heap praise on Ukraine's then Prime Minister Mykola Azarov on the occasion of his birthday in an open letter. This was a huge turnaround compared to 7 months earlier, when President of the European Council Herman Van Rompuy had told journalists that Azarov, quote, should stay at home, unquote, instead of visiting Brussels. And then the next section, the road to Vilnius. That conference in Vilnius, Lithuania, was where the EU Association Agreement was to be signed. The lobbying effort accelerated in 2013, starting with the March 2013 Rome Conference. The EU's Vilnius summit, slated for November 2013, was approaching where Ukraine was expected to sign the association agreement. On May 15th through 17th, 2013, Manafort flew again for a weekend in Warsaw and Brussels, returning on a Lavochkin executive jet. In Warsaw, he met one-on-one with Alexander Kwasniewski. On May 17th, Proby and Gusenbauer were in Brussels for the Ukraine on the road to the Vilnius conference. 2 months later, Manafort was again airbound, again on the Lavochkin plane, on a one-day visit from Frankfurt, landing from the U.S., bound for the Crimea on July 29th. He flew back from Crimea to Frankfurt on the same day. One day before, Russia and Ukraine had jointly celebrated the Soviet-era Navy Day with a shared display of their two fleets that was attended by Putin and Yanukovych. Joint maneuvers displayed the close contacts between the top brass of the two fleets that prefigured Russia's annexation of the Crimean Peninsula only 9 months later. But it was not for Navy Day that Manafort flew to Crimea, together with his assistant Konstantin Klimenik, one day later. His mission was to bolster Yanukovych's decision to go for Europe. Cox and Kwasniewski arrived in Crimea on the same day as Manafort. On the morning of July 30th of 2013, they were scheduled to meet with Yanukovych in Crimea for another session on Tymoshenko's fate. Kwasniewski said Manafort did not meet with the monitoring mission in Crimea on that day, but as the pace of events quickened in the summer and autumn of 2013, Manafort had a series of one-to-one meetings with Kwasniewski in Warsaw, the former Polish president, acknowledged. These culminated in Manafort flying to Warsaw on October 18th on a Lavochkin plane to meet Kwasniewski. Later the same day, Yanukovych said he would be ready to let Tymoshenko depart to Germany for treatment as soon as Ukraine's parliament passed legislation enabling this. Now, the next section really gets into the networking between Manafort and Lavochkin, and Lavochkin's behavior and Yulia Lavochkina's behavior with regard to the demonstrations. Again, there were two demonstrations, one on November 29th and a much, much larger one on December 1st. Yanukovych's police violently, though not lethally, dispersed the November 29th demonstration. This led to the December 1st demonstration, which was much larger. Those precipitated the Maidan demonstrations, along with some demonstrations by a supporter of a man who was to become the deputy commander of the Nazi Azov Battalion. That later.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. All of Dave Emery's 36 years of work is available for download on the SpitfireList.com website. The site includes many articles not included in the programs, as well as a small library of old anti-fascist books. All of the material on the website is available for free. Sister station WFMU is podcasting the For the Record programs. To subscribe to the podcast, use the link at the top of the description for this program or on the front page.
Before reading this straight through, I'm going to highlight some key sections. The private jet flights and personal connections show that Manafort's partner in this lobbying effort was Yanukovych's chief of staff, Lavochkin. Skipping down, Manafort's Ukraine engagements actually increased following Yanukovych's ouster in February of 2014. One more time. Manafort's Ukraine engagements actually increased following Yanukovych's ouster in February of 2014. In March to June of 2014, he spent a total of 27 days in Ukraine, whereas during the four preceding Euromaidan months, November through February of 2014, Manafort only visited Ukraine three times for a total of 9 days. Lavochkin is a junior partner of billionaire oligarch Dmytro Firtash, F-I-R-T-A-S-H. Lavochkin and Firtash together also control Ukraine's largest TV channel, Inter. Skipping down. Manafort's continued participation in the post-Yanukovych Ukraine also points to his ties to Lavochkin and Firtash. While most members of the Yanukovych administration fled to Russia or were arrested after February of 2014, Lavochkin has continued his political career with impunity, despite having served at the heart of Yanukovych's regime for 4 years. Euromaidan was triggered by events in Kiev on the night of November 29th, when police violently dispersed a small demonstration of pro-EU students who were protesting after Yanukovych refused to sign the association agreement. The violence prompted a huge demonstration occupying the heart of Kiev on December 1st. That's of 2013. According to messages between the sisters discussing Manafort's actions in Ukraine, that is Manafort's daughters, it was Manafort's idea, quote, to send those people out and get them slaughtered. Do you know whose strategy that was to cause that revolt and whatnot as a tactic to outrage the world and get focus on Ukraine? Manafort's daughter called her father's money, quote, blood money, unquote. The remarks were made by those privy to the deepest secrets of Manafort's personal life. They evoked the suspicion that Manafort manipulated the Maidan protests and the police violence to influence international opinion. One more time. Those remarks were made by those privy to the deepest secrets of Manafort's personal life. They evoked the suspicion that Manafort manipulated the Maidan protests and the police violence to influence international opinion. The appearance of the Manafort messages in 2016 reignited speculation in Ukraine that none other than Sergei Lavochkin instigated the attack on the students' demonstration on November 29th of 2013 in order to trigger outrage against Yanukovych. Some of the timeline fits this interpretation. On the day before the police attack, reporters noted Lavochkin's sister, Yulia Lavochkina, on whose jets Manafort had flown, openly fraternizing with the students on the Maidan. Lavochkin's TV crews covered the 4 a.m. events closely, and Lavochkin immediately tendered his resignation in protest at the police violence. The next day, the Voshchins TV channel played footage of the worst of the police violence on heavy rotation on primetime news. News anchors intoned that Yanukovych had, quote, shed the blood of Ukrainian children, unquote. Whereas the student protests have attracted hundreds, protests on Sunday, December 1st against the police violence attracted hundreds of thousands. This was the start of Euromaidan. And note the following, the issuing and then the strategically timed withdrawal of arrest warrants for Dmytro Firtash, the oligarch who was also networking with Manafort, and who, along with Sergei Lavochkin, owned Inter, the largest TV station in Ukraine, which appears to have had much to do with precipitating the huge December 1st demonstration, which was the beginning of Euromaidan. And note the networking here with Victoria Nuland, more about her in our next program, perhaps our next two shows. On October 30th of 2013, as Yanukovych was wavering over the association agreement with the EU, the U.S. issued an arrest warrant for Firtash. The U.S. withdrew the arrest warrant 4 days later after U.S. Deputy Secretary of State Victoria Nuland met Yanukovych in Kiev and received assurances that Yanukovych would sign the EU Association Agreement, Firtash said during extradition hearings in Vienna in 2015 that first revealed the details of the case. But come the Vilnius summit, Yanukovych failed to sign. The arrest warrant for Firtash was reissued in March of 2014, and Firtash was arrested in Vienna on March 12th of 2014. Now, again, reading directly from Wheels Up, Paul Manafort's flight records show how he supervised EU top brass in the run-up to Ukraine revolution. And we may not have time to finish this. I'm going to do the best I can. The next section of the BME Intel News from July 2nd of 2018 is called the Firtash Connection. You know, I think from a time standpoint, we're probably not going to have time to read this section. I'm going to begin our next program with a reading of this section. Again, I realize this is a very tall drink to quaff at one sitting. But again, the deep networking between Manafort and Sergei Lavochkin and his sister Yulia Lavochkina suggests that both were functioning as double agents. Perhaps that was from an ideological standpoint, or noting the fact, and the fact it is, that Ukraine, like much of the rest of the former Soviet Union, is basically a hotbed slash sewer of corruption with a tremendous concentration of wealth. Perhaps it was simply for money. The fact that Manafort was obviously a Western spook, frankly, he wasn't working for the Russians. He was working against the Russians. Is not to say that this was not a swamp of corruption. All kinds of people were taking all kinds of money from all kinds of people. This was part of the op. Donald Trump, for example, has all sorts of links to Russian oligarchs, but the point man and Russian mobsters, the point man for Manafort's dealing, for Trump's dealings with Russia, again, is Felix Sager, a longtime spook. And so far, Trump has no business arrangements in Russia, despite decades of trying. His dealings with Russia could be summed up as basically he attempted to get business deals with Russia. The primary position of spook Felix Sater in Trump's dealings with Russia suggests very strongly that Trump's machine in Russia was basically an op. It was an operation. When it became clear that Trump might become the Republican nominee, the Russians began paying more attention to Trump's business intrigues or business overtures. Then when he became the candidate, more still. Then when he became president, more still. But still, there is no Trump power in Moscow. But remember that the point man for Trump's business dealings with Russia is Felix Sager, a spook whose dealings go all the way back to September 11th, Al-Qaeda, Operation Green Quest. That, in my opinion, is why that very, very special prosecutor indeed, Robert Mueller, was appointed as the special prosecutor here. Do note, again, the strategically timed issuing and withdrawal of the arrest warrant for Lavochkin's business partner, Dmytro Firtash. On October 30th, 2013, as Yanukovych was wavering over the EU association agreement, the U.S. issued an arrest warrant for Firtash. That's on October 30th. The U.S. withdrew the arrest warrant 4 days later after U.S. Deputy Secretary of State Victoria Nuland met Yanukovych in Kiev and received assurances that Yanukovych would sign the association agreement. Firtash said during extradition hearings in Vienna in 2015. But come the Vilnius summit, Yanukovych failed to sign. The arrest warrant was then reissued in March of 2014, and Firtash was arrested in Vienna on March 12th of 2014. And again, whether or not Manafort actually helped to precipitate the sniper shootings in February of 2014, and we are going to review some of the indications that those sniper shootings may very well have been a provocation. Certainly the curious role of Sergei Lavochkin in basically working to get Ukraine from the Russian orbit into the Western orbit, which certainly would have benefited Lavochkin, Firtash, and everybody else in Ukraine who was on the take, because, simply put, there was more money to be pocketed from the West than there ever would be from Russia. But Lavochkin is Yanukovych's chief of staff, heavily networked with Manafort in the efforts to get Ukraine into the Western orbit from the Russian orbit. Yulia Lavochkina is flying Manafort around to his meetings with the Habsburg group. Yulia Lavochkina is then mixing with the demonstrators on November 29th when the police violently disperse them. Round-the-clock coverage is then given by Lavochkin and Firtash's television station to that dispersal, leading to the huge demonstrations on December 1st. That was the beginning of the Maidan. Manafort's daughters hacked texts from their cell phone. Talk about Manafort. Basically, it was his tactic to outrage the world and get focus on Ukraine. And note that whereas all of the other members of the Yanukovych government fled to Russia, Lavochkin is hanging around and swinging deals in post-Maidan Ukraine. Manafort spent more time in post-Maidan Ukraine than he had in pre-Maidan Ukraine, at least for the first 3 months. And again, note the role here of Victoria Nuland meeting with Yanukovych in Kiev. The arrest warrant for Firtash is withdrawn at that point, and then it is reissued after Yanukovych does not sign the EU association agreement. We're going to go into this and put together some other elements of review and presentation in our next several programs. However, this concludes For the Record 1022. Edwin Manafort, The Coming of Fascism to Ukraine and the Russiagate PSYOP. This is being recorded on August 28th of 2018. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.